Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. On October 4th, the Bureau of Land Management announced plans to open 725,000 acres of public lands and mineral estates across California's Central Coast and the Bay Area to new oil and gas drilling and fracking. But last week, California Governor Gavin Newsom signed a law making it harder for the administration to increase oil and gas production on public lands. The law bars any California leasing authority from allowing pipelines or other oil and gas infrastructure to be built on state property. According to the Center for Biological Diversity, the public lands the U.S. Bureau of Land Management has earmarked for leasing are in 11 counties, including Alameda, Contra Costa, Merced, Monterey and Santa Cruz, and Stanislaus. The move will end a more than five-year-old moratorium on leasing federal public land and mineral estates to oil companies. The Trump administration's destruction of public lands is not limited to California. In a recent piece for Yale 360, one of today's guests, veteran environmental journalist Jim Robbins, details how the Trump administration is systematically remaking U.S. policies toward public lands by moving aggressively to open protected areas for development, from the boundary waters of Minnesota to the Red Rock country of Utah to the nation's largest national forest in Alaska. Joining us to lay this out for us is Jim Robbins, a veteran journalist based in Helena, Montana. He has written for The New York Times, Condé Nast Traveler, and other publications. Jim Robbins' latest book is The Wonder of Birds, What They Tell Us About the World, Ourselves, and a Better Future. Hi, Jim. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. We are also joined by Claire Lakewood, senior attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity, a nonprofit that works to secure a future for all species, great and small, hovering on the brink of extinction through science, law, and creative media. Hi, Claire. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, it's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Well, Jim, your latest piece for Yale 360 paints a pretty bleak picture of what's happening to tens of millions of acres of public lands under this administration. In fact, Jim Lyons, a former Obama official at the Interior Department, told you that there is a quiet, almost covert effort to dismantle public lands management infrastructure. He says it's very effective, and he called it evil genius. So can you lay this out for us? What is that, what is actually happening across the country right now?
Well, I would say that it's bleak, of course, depending on your point of view. President Trump has an American energy dominance policy to up the production of oil and gas as much as possible to make America independent when it comes to energy. And that's what's behind a lot of what's going on. And that has really thrown the door open to oil and gas leasing just about everywhere you can think of, offshore, onshore, Alaska, along the coast of California. And some of these lands are being leased to oil and gas companies for pennies on the dollar. It's very cheap for these companies to tie these up for 10 years. Jim Lyons told me that even if... he said it's very hard to undo these leases, even if we wanted to, or if the next administration wanted to, that there are still leases from the last, the first George Bush administration that are being are being undone. So this effort is tying these lands up for oil and gas for a long time.
Wow. So Jim Lyons told you it'll be hard to undo these leases. He also said it's like Humpty Dumpty. It will take a long time to put the pieces back together. It will set conservation back a generation or two. Claire, what really strikes you about this administration's policies when it comes to public lands?
I think just how aggressive they are. What we're seeing with the recent decision to open land in the Bay Area and the northern central coast in California is a decision to open every possible acre that the administration could. They basically did an about-face to make that decision and actually denied the public the opportunity to comment on their proposal as well. That's the other feature we're seeing, is that the public is being shut out of having a say on what is happening.
How are organizations like CBD responding? You were behind the lawsuit that effectively halted the Bureau of Land Management oil and gas leasing in California since 2013. So how are organizations like yours responding to all of this?
I mean, obviously, we're watching every move that the administration makes very closely. We're tracking these proposals, and we engage in those public comment periods when they're made available. What we're seeing by way of environmental analyses dangerously downplay the actual risks and harms of oil and gas development and the climate change that comes with that. And so when necessary, when those analyses are so deficient that they don't comply with the law, we take it to the courts.
Jim, can you explain just how this works? As you say, it's going to be very hard to undo these leases. So when the administration announces plans to open up public lands, talk about the process. What happens after that?
Well, leasing lands doesn't always mean they're going to be developed. A lot of people, because it's so cheap, will lease lands and then nothing will happen for a long time. Maybe they'll expire before they get to develop them. But there already has been a large increase in the amount of acreage being developed all across the West. And so it could happen. And it looks like it's going to happen in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge in Alaska, which has been a subject of much contention for many years and now suddenly really has been opened up to oil and gas development. So it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to lose all public land if it's been leased, but we certainly are seeing a lot of public land being developed with roads, with wells, with more people and trucks and so on, and wildlife habitat and fragile areas. And that's really the problem in a lot of these areas, is they're very they're fragile, and they can't take much development. I did a piece years ago on New Mexico, northwest New Mexico, and it looks like some of these areas look like they've been with hundreds of miles of roads have been developed, white trucks, work trucks going in and out, and this is right next to areas that have been protected for rock art and things like that from hundreds of years ago. So a lot of this is not being done in a sensitive way. It's being done in a way that's damaging some of the attributes of our public lands.
You also report that companies are locking up tracts of federal land for 10 years while paying very minimal fees. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, it's just a few dollars an acre for some of these leases. They've also rolled back the methane rule. So methane is a more potent greenhouse gas than CO2, and that's contributing to climate change. And so a lot of these companies don't have to try and restrict their methane releases on these public lands where it's been developed. So there's a kind of a multi-pronged approach to the development of public lands and a long list of environmental impacts coming from these changes that the Trump administration is making.
Claire, what would you add? Can you help us understand just what happens after the administration opens these lands, the leasing process, the cost, the damage done? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so once the lands are deemed open, the Bureau of Land Management offers them up for lease. The starting bid is $2 an acre, and if a parcel doesn't sell on the day of the auction, it's available for over-the-counter purchase at that minimum price for a whole other year. Once an operator has a lease, they can start to go on to the land to explore. As Jim mentioned, they can build roads, they get trucks through. The process of exploring for oil and gas often involves dump trucks, where you're driving these trucks through to actually cause like seismic vibrations in the ground. It's incredibly disruptive for some of the fragile habitat that we're seeing in California and throughout the West.
Now, does this fee differ from past administrations?
It's the same minimum fee that the Bureau of Land Management has had set for a while, but what we're seeing is much more aggressive leasing. There are more parcels available. They're cheaper to buy. We've got more people buying up speculative leases.
And what are the other differences between, say, for example, past administrations, the Bush administration, Obama and Trump? As you say, Trump is much more aggressive, but what else differs?
We're seeing areas being opened for oil and gas development that I just never thought we would see. We're seeing areas where the federal government still owns the oil and gas rights underneath state and county parks or in wilderness areas, and those are now being opened for leasing. You know, areas in counties that thought that they would never see drilling again, and also in counties that have actually prohibited oil and gas drilling. The federal government, it's very new for us to see the Bureau of Land Management simply ignoring those local planning laws and pushing to open public lands in places where it is explicitly clear that people don't want it.
Wow. What about Northern California? What really stands out for you about that?
So we're seeing areas being opened up in Santa Cruz County, which has prohibited all oil and gas drilling. We're seeing areas being opened in Monterey and Alameda County, where there are prohibitions on fracking and other dangerous forms of drilling. And the same in San Bernardino, actually. As far as actual areas we're looking at, we're seeing areas being opened along the coast, in the coastal zone, for drilling, and we're seeing areas being opened up underneath Mount Diablo State Park, in Garland Ranch Regional Park, and also right up against the boundary of Pinnacles. So when people are out enjoying those areas, there's now, if those areas are leased, you're ultimately bringing with it all the impacts of oil and gas drilling.
So the boundary of Pinnacles?
I mean, yep, up against the boundary.
And what does this mean exactly? I mean, are we going to see oil rigs in these places, or?
It opens the potential for it, yeah. I mean, operators can lease, they can start driving their trucks through, and I'm sure you know, when you're actually in these incredible wild places that California has, it's not like there's, you know, a fence that marks the edge of the park. You know, don't look beyond here. We're talking about interruptions to view sheds and things like increased pollution, air pollution and water pollution that come with oil and gas development that can really affect the protected places that are right next door.
Wow. Jim, what would you add?
I would add, I think what you're seeing here is what you're in Department of Interior and to a lesser degree the Forest Service, but is that people aren't playing by the rules anymore. You know, similar to what Trump himself is doing, the norms and the rules and the agreements are being ignored. Department of Interior Secretary David Bernhardt, for example, refused to recuse himself on matters that, of clients that he represented in his past life as a lobbyist before he became Secretary of Interior. They're ignoring agreements that were made with environmentalists and ranchers and others about management of the sage grouse on millions of acres of sagebrush land, sagebrush forest in the western states. And they're changing the management plans to allow more oil and gas in those areas. They're not testifying before Congress if they're called to. And if they do go and testify, they don't say anything. This is what I've heard. I haven't been present, but this is what the kinds of things that are happening is there's just kind of a flouting of a lot of the norms and rules that were respected even under previous Republican administrations. So I think that's a big part of what's happening. They're just trying to get as much done as they can as fast as possible. And Jim Lyons said it was a Humpty Dumpty philosophy where they're trying to break as many things as they can and it'll take many years to put it back together. Whereas Steve Bannon, Trump's former secretary, or excuse me, former advisor, said it's a deconstruction of the administrative state and in favor of business. And I think that explains it pretty well.
Mm. Jim Robbins is a veteran journalist based in Helena, Montana, and he has a new piece out for Yale 360. They do great reporting on the climate crisis and environmental issues. His piece is called Open for Business, The Trump Revolution on America's Public Lands. We're also joined by Claire Lakewood, senior attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity. And they are watching all of this very closely, and they have filed lawsuits. So, Claire, when we're talking about the legalities around all of this, What does it mean since California Governor Gavin Newsom recently signed a law to counter what this administration does is planning to increase oil and gas production on protected public lands? What does that mean now?
So the bill would prohibit infrastructure that helps oil get off protected public lands, but that's actually a really fairly narrow class of the kinds of public lands that are ordinarily leased. So for us in California, principally it means we're talking about oil and gas production on Carrizo Plain National Monument. Carrizo Plain National Monument is one of the only, if not the only, national monument in the country that also has oil and gas drill rigs in place. The majority of the public land that is being proposed to be opened right now won't actually be covered by that bill, unfortunately. So we're really looking at a federal administration that is having its way.
So how can we get information about the companies that step up to lease these lands? Where is that available?
It's really challenging. The Bureau of Land Management doesn't make a lot of information available. Also, in the context of the changes we're seeing under this current administration, it is really difficult to get responses to Freedom of Information Act requests. I've made Freedom of Information Act requests to the California Office of Bureau of Land Management and have been told that it will be a year before they're able to give me anything. So there are databases that the Bureau of Land Management puts some really limited information on, but they're difficult to navigate. They're often incomplete or out of date, and often people that are interested in leasing a parcel use shell companies with a different name, so it can be really difficult to tell who's actually interested in an area.
Jim, what has your experience been like reporting and trying to find this information?
Well, it's hard to find a lot of information. The Bureau itself has been hamstrung. You know, they're talking about moving career employees of the Bureau of Land Management to Colorado and Nevada and out of Washington, D.C. They don't talk about these things. A lot of these things are being done kind of under the cover of confidentiality. So there's a lot of confusion in the agency and a lot of people who don't want to talk about what's going on. I think a lot of people who are there as a career are worried about losing their job. Jim Lyons told me a lot of people are just trying to keep their head down. A lot of the people who've come in to run the agency are people who are sworn enemies of public land. People like William Perry Pendley and David Bernhardt have represented. Well, William Perry Pendley has said selling federal land to be the best thing that could happen. He's an avowed sagebrush rebel for years. He's run the Mountain States Legal Foundation in Colorado, and they have tried to undo federal protections for a long time. And David Bernhardt was a lobbyist who represented mining companies, oil and gas companies, and a lot of other companies that do business on public lands and have chafed at a lot of the regulations and restrictions. And that's part of the reason, I think, for an overthrow of a lot of these rules and regulations and environmental protections, is because they realize they have the power and they have the ability to change all of these things fairly quickly.
Hmm. Claire, we spoke briefly about lawsuits, and I wonder what your thoughts are on the lawsuits we're seeing from many attorneys general across the country, including California Attorney General Javier Becerra. Along with environmental organizations, they have filed one lawsuit after another against this administration. When it comes to their anti-environment policies, how effective have these lawsuits been?
Incredibly. What we're seeing is political appointees who are so eager and so ideologically driven in their desperation to unwind the kind of sensible historic environmental regulation that we've had in place, that they're doing a really bad job. And the courts are recognizing that. So the track record of the states and the environmental groups that have been challenging these actions in court is actually incredibly good. It's really heartening and reassuring.
Could these cases, though, go to the Supreme Court? Some of them?
Ultimately, it's a possibility. I think it depends on the given facts of any particular case. Mm. It's obviously something that everyone is waiting and watching.
Right. Claire, we have a question from Susan who says, what can citizens do to counter this outrageous land grab? Like many citizens, she writes, I am just shocked that this president has so much power to turn back decades of protection and laws, seemingly so easily and quickly. How is this possible?
Yeah, so best options for pushing back on what our administration is doing is to contact the Bureau of Land Management, the Bakersfield office in particular. They haven't made a final decision yet. Let them know what you think about their plans to allow oil and gas drilling and fracking on our federal public lands. And then contact your elected representative and let them know that it's an important issue to you and that you want Californian public lands protected.
So we have William Perry Penley, acting director of the BLM, who has spent his career fighting federal land protections and environmental regulations. What about the local offices? Like, for example, you just mentioned BLM Bakersfield. Have we seen changes at the local offices?
My experience in California is that those are largely career staffers. Obviously, you know, there are people that have gone into the Bureau of Land Management because they're passionate about our public lands. And I think many of those people are doing the best they can in a very difficult political climate. I think we're increasingly seeing decisions being pulled out of local office hands and taken to head office where the political appointments are sitting, and we're seeing decisions that are driven by ideology rather than the good science and policy.
Well, we will put contact information on our website for BLM Bakersfield. Before we let you go, Claire, a lot of this information is shocking to people because it just doesn't get the attention that it deserves. So final thoughts for you about what it will take to actually protect these lands? I mean, it's also pretty incredible that the administration is going so hard after California, and I also wonder what you think about that.
So I think there is an breathtaking hypocrisy in the federal administration criticizing California for its air pollution situation and for its purported water pollution situation at the same time that that administration is opening up our public lands for oil and gas drilling, which cause air pollution and water pollution. Ultimately, the only thing that is going to protect our air, our water, and our climate is to phase out all drilling on our public lands. That means starting with no new leasing, but it also means moving to shutting down all the existing production on federal lands. The science is quite clear that if we want to avoid the worst harms of climate change, we need to phase out development on public lands in the United States.
Where does this go from here, especially in California?
I think we're likely to see litigation over these decisions. I think the hope is that we will ultimately see a change in administration that might see a change in policy, but in the meantime, until that happens, we'll keep fighting using every tool that we have available.
And we have one more question from Maury. Does the public have any legal protection from having corporations steal our public assets by underpaying the land they plan to destroy?
It's a challenging situation. We've got good environmental protection laws. We're trying to make sure that those are properly enforced to protect our public lands. But again, at the end of the day, the only way to make sure they're totally protected is to stop all new leasing and to stop all drilling on our public lands.
Claire Lakewood is senior attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity, a nonprofit that works to secure a future for all species, great and small. Claire, thank you for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
Coming up after a break, we will continue our conversation with Jim Robbins, veteran journalist based in Helena, Montana. He has written for many publications. He is out with a pretty lengthy piece about what we're discussing today from Yale 360. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. It's called Open for Business, the Trump Revolution on America's Public Lands. This is Your Call's One Planet series, and we'll be back after this. We'll be right back. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. You can listen to past shows and sign up for our podcast at yourcallradio.org. And you can also send us a comment or a question and follow us on Twitter at Your Call Radio. Jim Robbins is a veteran journalist based in Helena, Montana. His latest piece for Yale 360 is called Open for Business, The Trump Revolution on America's Public Lands. Jim is the author of a fantastic book called The Wonder of Birds, What They Tell Us About the World, Ourselves, and a Better Future. Jim, do you have anything to add to Maury's question about whether the public has any legal protections around all of this?
Well, a lot of these issues end up in federal court, and the Center for Biological Diversity does a lot of that kind of a thing of suing the administration to uphold environmental laws. But what's going on is the Trump administration has appointed over 150 judges, which is more than the Obama administration did in two terms. And a lot of these judges are conservative. And a lot of environmentalists and others feel that they've stacked the courts, the federal courts, with conservative judges who will overturn a lot of these issues that were that don't fit the philosophy of a conservative approach to environmental regulations. And so that's a big area that has not gotten a lot of attention. The changes in the courts. There's also something called the Chevron deference. That for a long time, courts have deferred to agencies to make these kind of decisions as a matter of policy. But there is more and more questioning about whether they should not get involved in these issues. And so a lot of these issues may be made in federal courts in the future than have been in the past because of the change in philosophy. So the federal courts are a place to watch to see what happens to these issues.
I'm so glad you brought this up, Jim, because the Huffington Post just reported that Senate Republicans on Thursday voted to advance another Trump judicial nominee, Justin Walker, who earned a rare and embarrassing not qualified rating from the American Bar Association. Every Republican on the Judiciary Committee voted to advance this 37-year-old, and he's going to have a lifetime seat on the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Kentucky.
Right. And then, of course, there's a Supreme Court, which has changed pretty dramatically just in the last couple of years. So, yeah, I mean, the courts have a very different attitude these days toward environmental issues than they used to. So every level of this decision-making process, these rules and regulations and norms that have been adopted over the last several decades are now being undone very rapidly. And it's a dramatic change, and people probably don't realize how dramatic these federal regulations are being changed. One thing I would add is that our public lands are more used than they ever have been by hikers and bikers and all sorts of recreationists. One of the things that happened early on in this administration was that Jason Chaffetz of Utah introduced a bill to sell off some 3 million acres of public land, and people who recreate, hunters, sportsmen, the outdoor industry, people like Patagonia, North Face, they came unglued. They fought this effort to sell off public lands. Well, now it's a lot harder. There's no one thing that's going on for people to oppose. But there's opposition. But the reason is because the economy now on public lands is largely about recreation. Now, recreation has its own impacts. We've seen something called over-tourism at places like Zion and Yellowstone and a lot of other national parks and monuments. So many people are out there recreating that there are crowds. There's no place to park in Yellowstone. There's no place to park in Zion. But it shows you that there's a large movement toward using public lands for non-consumptive uses. And so I think in some ways we should be We should be encouraging more people to use more public lands as a way to kind of offset some of the extractive economy. And I think that so there's a battle coming up over what happens next after this administration, whether Trump is reelected or not. I will note that the candidates have called for an end to oil and gas leasing. The Democratic candidates have called for an end to oil and gas leasing on public lands as we battle climate change. So it couldn't get a much more stark difference between this administration and perhaps a Democratic administration.
Given that the people you interviewed say that this administration is so incredibly aggressive, what happens if he wins again? Let's just take public lands. What happens?
Well, I think that the damage that could be done to environmental concerns, to ecosystems, to endangered species, and so on—I mean, it will be totally pulled apart and take many, many decades to put back together, to put all of this back together again, if there is the will to do this. I mean, it may be, you know, depending on how the politics shake out, if the Senate is controlled by Republicans or the House or whatever, that you'll never be able to restore a lot of these protections on public lands. I would say there's something like 600 million acres of public lands, and largely in the western United States and Alaska. And that's a lot of land. And you could do a lot of damage by undoing most of these protections, whether it's logging and roadless areas, or whether it's oil and gas, or whether it's, you know, allowing motorized bicycles on trails throughout the system. There's a lot of things that may never be undone once this administration undoes them.
Jim Robbins is a veteran journalist based in Helena, Montana, and you can find the piece he wrote about public lands at yourcallradio.org. Jim, can we talk a little bit more about William Perry Penley, the acting director of the Bureau of Land Management? As you report, he has spent his career fighting federal land protections and environmental regulations, and he recently spoke at the Society of Environmental Journalists conference, and he basically refused to talk about his personal views on climate change. In a 2011 press release from when he headed the Mountain States Legal Foundation in Colorado, he was quoted referring to the, quote, fiction of man-made climate change.
Right. I mean, the people who are running these agencies, which environmental regulations are a large part of what they are supposed to do, are really kind of anti-environment. And people like William Perry Pendley or Karen Budd Fallon, a property rights attorney from Wyoming, and Bernhardt, they are all very pro-development, anti-climate change, anti-environmental regulation. So that in some ways, people, environmentalists, have said the fox is guarding the hen house. And I think that's largely what's going on here.
Karen Budd Fallon, a Wyoming property rights attorney and longtime critic of federal public lands management, has been named deputy solicitor for parks and wildlife at the Interior Department. What else can you tell us about Karen Budd Fallon?
Well, she is of the same cut from the same cloth is William Perry Penley. William Perry Penley ran the Mountain States Legal Foundation, which kind of represented oil and gas development interests, mining interests, logging interests, suing the federal government over what they considered environmental regulations that were too strict. And they were also property rights activists when it comes to protecting endangered species and private land. They claim that protections, environmental protections on private land were a taking, or on public land that was being used for development, that preventing development would be a kind of deprivation of rights to access and to develop these lands. So it's a totally 180 degree change from what previous administration, certainly what the Obama and Clinton administrations had done with public lands. It's far away from those kinds of philosophies as you can get. But even under George H.W. Bush, and there was there were differences, but they weren't as extreme as they are now. And I've covered these issues since 1980, and these are as extreme a change in public lands philosophies and rules and regulations as I've seen in that time. It's almost like I started out covering the Sagebrush Rebellion in 1980, and it's like finally the Sagebrush Rebellion is here. It's happening in a different way than we imagined back then, but it's here and it's happening, and it's happening very quickly.
Since you brought up the Obama and Clinton administrations, in your piece, you write that the Obama administration had decided against renewing two expired leases owned by the Chilean mining company near the 365-square-mile Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness in Minnesota and ordered a study of possible impacts a proposed copper and nickel mine could have on the natural area with an eye toward imposing a 20-year ban. And the Trump administration reinstated the leases last year and just ended the study.
That's right. And there's lots of things going on like that. I mean, you know, they de-gazetted parts of the Bears Ear and the which was set aside, excuse me, by President Obama, a Bears Ear National Monument, and the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, which was protected by President Clinton. They shrunk Bears Ears by 85% and the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument by 51%. Utah has been ground zero for a lot of this Sagebrush Rebellion. The people there, congressional delegates, are very anti-federal land, and so Trump responded to their concerns by shrinking these areas. Again, I think these things have brought a huge amount of people to see them. I mean, they could be national parks. They're that grand. I've been there many times to both of these places, but they want to open them up to coal mining and possible gold mining and to other development, off-road vehicle use, things like that. They have, again, opened up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil and gas development, which for years was a bone of contention, but it was suddenly now it's open. They've changed tact from previous administration on the Pebble Mine in Alaska, a gold and silver mine that was found to be highly damaging to the salmon fishery in the bay there. And now the EPA has backed off of their stance and looks like things may move forward there. And then, of course, there's the Trump's vaunted fence along the border, near Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument and other places, where they're going to put 175 miles of fence. And a lot of those miles won't allow any crossing back and forth between Mexico. And a lot of the species that live in these places need to have the genetics that their own species have on the other side of the fence. So it remains to be seen what that will happen with that. And that includes everything from jaguars to wolves to other species that won't be able to get through the fence.
Since you brought up the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, we did a show about this when the administration made the announcement. This is the place that is just so breathtakingly beautiful. Every photo coming out of that area is just amazing. So they're going to open this to mining and drilling. Has anything happened yet? And again,
no.
How do we keep track of this?
Nothing has happened that I know of yet. There hasn't been any development. Those things take time to play out, and they may not. I mean, they may, if Trump is not elected, and it may things may start to get walked back by the next administration. But there are other places where things are happening, like the oil and gas development on public lands around the West, where it is being developed. And if you saw these things from the air, you'd realize just how widespread the development and roading of these areas are. And a lot of these places, I mean, we're talking about areas that are so dry in the West that these scars on the land will last for generations. I mean, you can still see at the Custer battlefield where some infantrymen dug pits to protect themselves during the battle, and those are still there. And that was in 1876. So a lot of these roads are not going to be reclaimed and healed. They're going to be there for a long time on the landscape.
Jim Robbins is a veteran journalist based in Helena, Montana, and he has written a lengthy piece about the Trump Revolution on America's Public Lands. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can email yourcall@kalw.org. You can also tweet us at yourcallradio. Let's go to a caller. Let's hear from Esmeralda in San Francisco. Hi, Esmeralda. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much, Rose. First of all, I just wanted to say that in California, we recently had a 7-point earthquake in Ridgecrest, and that entire town is owned by the fracking company. The community center was the name of the fracking company, but that isn't my question. I wanted to know, with these oil leases, would it be possible, and I remember a young man did this once, would it be possible for companies that were pro-environment, and there's many, many wealthy pro-environment companies like Patagonia and others, and even individuals, creating a company that could buy up these leases themselves and preserve the land in that way? Or would they be would all of these leases only be approved by these right-wing judges? Is there a way for a group to form a company to counteract what's happening?
Thank you, Esmeralda. Jim?
I know there have been efforts to do that. There was kind of a high-profile effort to buy up federal leases in Utah, I think, several years ago. But I don't think they are upheld if they're not bought by oil and gas companies. I don't think environmentalists can do that, can buy up land just to lock it up and not use it. I think the courts have ruled against that. I could be wrong, but I know there'd be a lot more of it if it were legal.
You know, Jim, we did a show years ago about this documentary that everyone should watch. It's called Bitter 70. And it was about this environmental activist, Tim DeChristopher, who pretended to be basically an executive. And he went to one of these leasing events. And basically, you're given a number, just like you would be at any auction. And he didn't have the money, but he bid on land and got it. And when they found out that he didn't have the money and he wasn't who he said he was, the Obama administration really went after him. And if I remember correctly, the Obama administration then took the leasing events online to prevent this kind of, quote, disruption from happening again. Is that right?
That seems to me his lease was not valid. And
right.
I don't know about the legality of what other environmentalists could do, but I don't think it's allowed. I think the courts would rule against that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Or otherwise, you'd have a lot more of it going on.
Right.
And one of the things I would say, even though this gets couched in terms of the environment, there are also cultural impacts on Native American sites, on rock art sites, petroglyphs and pictographs. And there was talk. Now, I think it's been carved off limits for now of developing oil and gas around Chaco Canyon National Park in New Mexico because of the Indian ruins, Native American ruins all around there. But there is impact, and I went to a site in near Aztec, New Mexico, and it's this famous rock art of a European on horseback greeting the Pueblo Indians from that area back in the 1600s. And there was oil and gas development going on right near it. I mean, it is one of the most iconic rock art sites in the country. And here you have all of this dust and noise and exploration going on right next to it.
What are you hearing from Native American activists on this issue? I mean, this is stolen land to begin with, and now these corporations are coming in so close to these beautiful areas. I mean, it's hard to believe that they're coming up right to the border of Pinnacles. What are you hearing from Native Americans?
Well, you know, this is all U.S.-owned public land, and there's certainly, on Bears Ears, for example, there's a lot of sacred sites, sacred areas, but it's split. There are people who see what's going on and are opposed to it, and there are other people that welcome the development. I know there was a split in a Navajo nation about bear's ears. So it varies. I mean, in Canada, they're building the Trans Mountain Pipeline, and some tribal councils want to buy into the Trans Mountain Pipeline, and some people are talking about blocking it by getting out and blocking the equipment. So you have a difference of opinion in some of these issues, because it does mean jobs.
Right.
One thing I would add to this is there's a Rosemont mine is an area south of Tucson where they want to put in this giant copper mine on Forest Service land. And court just ruled against it, saying that this is also sacred land. The court ruled against the mine, though, saying that you couldn't use the mining law of 1872 is famous for giving away very wealthy mineral deposits for almost nothing to corporations. And that's the case with the Rosemont mine south of Tucson. And they just ruled, the court just ruled that you could not dump tailings, and there'd be thousands of tons of tailings, if not millions of tons of tailings from this mine, on land that was protected or was set aside as a land to be developed for mining. And if that's the case, if this holds up through the courts, it will prevent this mine from going forward and other mines as well. So it can show you where, if the courts change, you might start losing these kinds of battles more often. So the courts are going to be critical in a lot of how these policies are decided.
Yeah. Would you say, Jim, at the end of the day, this is really about the courts?
Yeah, I think that the federal courts and the Supreme Court are where a lot of these issues will end up. And that's where they end up now. But there's been this sea change in these courts, and these more conservative judges are going to be there for many decades to come. Mm.
Do you have any updates on the roadless rule? You also write about this. This was a conservation initiative coming out of the Clinton administration. 58 million acres of roadless land in the nation's national forests were protected from development under this rule, as you report, so as not to spoil the wilderness qualities until a decision on long-term protection could be made. And included in those protections were 9.5 million acres of the Tongass National Forest in southeastern Alaska, which is the country's largest national forest. But according to the Washington Post, Trump has instructed Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue to write new roadless rules that would eliminate those protections to then allow logging, mining, and energy development.
Right. So to be clear, these are lands that are not wilderness, but that are protected in case that have wilderness qualities, but are protected so that they could become wilderness someday if that's the way things go. It was a big deal during the Clinton administration to set aside these millions of acres of land, not only in Alaska, but all over the country, to protect them from development until their fate could be decided. And in Alaska, it appears that the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, is now moving to do away with those protections so that they can go in and start logging these old growth forests again in these areas. And I don't know where this is, if there's been a court case or something that's ongoing, if there's been a lawsuit, but it's very divisive. And this is a huge change from past administrations in the last 30 or 40 years to something like this. I mean, it would be, if it were to happen nationally, if roadless areas were suddenly up to be developed across the country, it would be, I can't think of a bigger policy change under this administration.
And just quickly, Jim, we're almost out of time. What about the administration's plan to move hundreds of high-level BLM, Bureau of Land Management staffers, out of Washington to the West, including places like Reno, Nevada, and Grand Junction, Colorado? Now, the administration says they want these people to be closer to the lands they manage, but the staffers say, no, this is an effort to drive us out of our jobs. What's the latest on this?
Well, Jim Lyons and others, he's a former BLM deputy, I can't remember his title, Secretary for Lands and Minerals, I think. They think it's an effort to to deconstruct the administrative state, to force people to leave who don't want to move to Reno or Grand Junction from Washington, D.C., to kind of piecemeal apart the BLM so that the they're no longer effective. And as far as I know, that's still in the works, that they're going to move some people to Grand Junction and some people to Reno. And people are leaving. They were taking early retirements and so on because they don't want to leave. So it remains to be seen, because a lot of this isn't known. They won't testify before Congress, officials from the Interior Department. So we don't know really what's going on. But those are the kind of things I read about and hear.
Jim, for people who care deeply about lands, what can people do about this?
Well, that's a good question. I hope for the next administration to come together in a way that, whether it's a Republican administration that's more, more moderate, or a Democratic administration that cares about environmental issues on public lands. These public lands are not only beautiful to look at, but they are habitat for wildlife. A lot of rivers and streams are protected on these public lands, lakes. For the future of public lands is probably in things like protecting CO2 that's stored in forests and in soil. So they have a huge role to play in the climate change future of this country, and in the wildlife habitat future of this country. So hopefully there'll be people who realize that and get in the next administration and offer more protections for these lands rather than a dissembling of these lands.
Jim Robbins is a veteran journalist based in Helena, Montana, and you can find the latest piece he wrote for Yale 360 about the Trump revolution on America's public lands at yourcallradio.org. Thank you so much, Jim.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And I would like to give you the Bakersfield BLM number. It's 916-941-3146. You can make your voice heard there. 916-941-3146. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. This is Your Calls One Planet series.